got to the Mets in a few minutes. They're about to officially lose to the Pittsburgh Pirates, ending this road trip on a little bit of a sour note. We've talked a lot of Yankees here in the opening hour. You can rewind on the Odyssey app to check out all the action. The manager's been discussed a lot. And there are some Yankee fans who are ready to say, I'm desperate. They are ready to pull that old lever that you can pull in the middle of a baseball season, which is, hey, things aren't working. Let's blow it up and fire the manager and hope things change. And I cited this about 5 minutes ago, 10 minutes ago. It's happened a lot throughout baseball. There are a lot of examples where you get desperate. May not be fair, may not be the nice thing to do, but you fire a manager and all of a sudden things change. So we put together a tiny bit of a poll. We took the four names that Yankee fans have had on their minds over the course of time over the last half a decade. Four guys who I think would run to the managerial office and say, thank you, sir, I will take the job. We gave you Carlos Beltran, who's desperate to be an MLB manager again, currently working with the Mets. But I'm sure the Mets would say, sure, you have a chance to manage the Yankees? Get out of here. You've got Buck Showalter, who is still probably very bitter about the way things ended last year with the Mets. And as Lugie said so elegantly, Buck Showalter would have a chance to finish his story as the Yankee manager. Then you've got old faithful Don Mattingly, the man that Yankee fans have been obsessed with for many, many years, currently employed by the Toronto Blue Jays. But again, I'm sure the Blue Jays would say, great.
I think I have to do that one.
That's your choice?
I think I have to do that one.
Of course, the fourth option is Joe Girardi, the former Yankee manager, the guy Aaron Boone replaced, who's currently in the Yes Network booth. Your answer is Donnie Baseball?
Yeah, I'm Donnie Baseball. I did not vote because I very rarely go on Twitter, but I'm verbally voting.
He's verbally voting for Don Mattingly. I got to tell you. I look at all of these choices, and no offense to all of them, a part of me goes back to, you know what? I'm not desperate yet. I'm not ready to pull that lever. And usually the lever is pulled and you promote somebody, so the guy would be Brad Ausmus. Mm-hmm. But trust me, if I put Brad Ausmus on a poll, everybody would fall asleep.
Right. I mean, that's the one that it was going to be, but it doesn't make sense to vote him because that's the obvious one.
So here are our results with over 1,100 votes in just 5 minutes. Oh, and you know what they say sometimes?
Yeah.
You know, based on the early returns.
Yeah, when you know, you know.
You can almost, as some may say, stop the count. So I guess we're stopping the count.
I'm not stopping the count. Otherwise, I'm storming the Capitol.
So the ultimate loser in this is Carlos Beltran. He only got 18% of the vote. Yankee fans still don't like him. The guy who finished in second to last, but it's very close, Joe Girardi, 24% of the vote. 25% of the vote for Buck Showalter. You're a winner with 33% of the vote. Donnie Baseball!
That's what I'm talking about. Pathetic. I told you it would be Donnie Baseball.
That's pathetic.
This is Tiki Barber. I just told you.
I know you were right.
I told you. Yeah. He's just the one that nobody knows about. We know about Buck. Right?
We know about Mattingly. He managed the Dodgers. He managed the Marlins.
Never managed the Yankees. Thinks he's like his legendary status as a Yankee is just going to make him legendary as a manager.
All right.
I'm just saying. Yeah. I told you that was going to win.
Yeah, I think all those options are terrible. And I think within a week, everybody would be calling up to complain about any one of those guys managing instead of Aaron Boone. Let's go to Colin in Hawthorne, New Jersey. What's up, Colin?
Hey, guys. Hey, listen, I'm a Yankee, though. They look soft, and they're taking the identity of the manager. And a microcosm of what's going on was on the 4th of July, you know, they lost the first two games. The game starts down with a stare down. And then Aaron Boone calls off his the two guys, you know, and then they celebrate like they won something. You know, teams are not intimidating anymore when it comes to Yankee Stadium, and they're proving it. So, Tiki, if that was you and that was your manager and you're in this, you know, like slump, would you be pissed off that your manager put stop the stare down?
Who's going to fight on that team? It's Verdugo, and that's it. I'm trying to think.
If you're going to fight another team?
Yeah, like somebody's going to actually lose it and just CC Sabathia it. Who's it going to be?
I think Aaron Judge would beat somebody up.
Not a chance.
No?
Not a chance.
He's a peaceful giant?
He is a peaceful giant.
I think that Austin Wells has some attitude.
He's a lover, not a fighter.
That mustache tells me everything. Look, his point was, for those that missed it, last week, I think it was the 4th of July game, the Yankees and the Reds engaged in something I have seen before. I've seen it on an NHL ice. I've seen it in baseball years ago. a stare down where after the national anthem, a few guys decide not to leave.
Yes.
And they just stand there.
Yes. It's corny and it's dumb and it's like, is it really antagonistic? What is it?
Well, what it was is it was antagonizing the home plate umpire who wanted to start the game.
Yes.
And yet you had Ashcroft, and I forget who even the two Yankees were. I think they were relievers. Like, I don't even know who the Yankee relievers were that engaged in this. But basically, they just stand there and they stare at each other on the field until someone decides to leave. Now, I say this as somebody with no athletic prowess, as somebody that doesn't win a lot of competitions. I could win a stare down. All it takes is staring and standing. Like, look, I'm going to stand right now. Huh? I could stand and do the rest of the show like this.
Right.
It's not a big freaking deal.
But you got to stand and not move and just give you the mean mug face.
Oh, that's the rule?
That's the rule.
So I'd have to, I'm standing right now.
Right.
I would have to stand, put my hands in my pocket, and as I'm talking to you, just mean mug you?
Just mean mug me. Now, the problem is, it's so silly, you can't help but laugh.
And once you laugh, you're eliminated.
You're out.
Interesting. Yeah, so our caller's critique is that Aaron Boone was the one who said, all right, knock it off, fellas.
Aaron Boone said, dude, can we play baseball? Like, seriously.
You know what I heard? So if you missed it last week, Tiki did a great job. Sean did a great job. Loogie did a better job than everybody. No offense to you, Tiki, but he was just on his game.
He's the future.
This is why I'm a generational talent.
I kind of agree with
that. He's the future.
So Sean Morash was on. He is now on vacation. And apparently, Sean was so pissed off at Aaron Boone stopping the mean mugging competition that he said this on the radio Friday afternoon.
I'm not sure how Hal Steinbrenner justifies keeping Aaron Boone employed.
How about that? What? I give Sean credit. He was the first jackass around here to say, fire Aaron Boone.
Didn't he also say that John Merrow was worse than Jerry Jones?
No, he didn't say that.
I mean, didn't I hear that?
Oh, boy.
Didn't I hear that? Which might be the most asinine thing I've ever heard come out of Sean's mouth.
First of all, can I teach you a lesson?
Yes.
All right. That was your first day of vacation?
Yes.
Shut the radio off.
I didn't. I just heard that he said that.
Oh, it got back to you?
I didn't even hear. I was on a plane.
See?
I was in a coma flying overnight to Ireland.
As much as you guys said I don't, I'm able to disconnect when I'm on vacation. I just don't disconnect from the Mets. That's the true story. Like, I do try to disconnect from everything else. I keep up with what's going on in sports, but I try to disconnect.
Evan in Vermont is on the thing. Evan, how are you?
Really? Are you sure?
Hold on a second. Beningo asked me to come on.
Okay.
I didn't call on my own.
I'm not sure. Tell us anything.
And when Joe asks a favor, I always say yes. He's my guy. Anyhow, as much as you guys don't think I disconnect, I love our radio station. I give it a break.
All right.
But on Friday, I drove home from Raleigh, North Carolina, in the middle of the night, so I rewinded on the Odyssey app, and I listened to a lot of stuff. And one of the things I listened to was Sean say that.
Mm.
Do you have it ready? Come on, Rosa. You know who wouldn't screw this up?
Lukey.
That's why I'm the future.
This is why I'm the future.
I'm not sure how Hal Steinbrenner justifies keeping Aaron Boone employed.
That's right. And it's all because of the stare down.
The stare down?
Because Aaron Boone, who was the camp counselor, who said, enough of the stare down, fellas.
Maybe he was joking.
No, he was not. Let's go to Eric in Rivervale, New Jersey. What's up, Eric?
Evan, Tiki, how are you guys?
All's good.
What's up?
Welcome back, Evan. And just real quick on the stare down there. Well, actually, I've got my 10-year-old son in the car here coming back from camp. Is it all right if he says hello?
Yeah, of course. How was camp, son? What's his name? I called him son. I'm a real old man now.
Alex.
Hey, Alex, what's how up, was Alex? Camp today, pal?
Good.
Good. Did you...
How was work?
Did you say how was work?
We were working right now.
Yeah.
It's good so far.
You are participating in our work.
Let me ask you a question. Do you swim when you're at camp?
No.
Oh, good. Because I that was my least favorite part of camp, because I always felt uncomfortable changing into my bathing suit gear. So I'm glad you don't have to swim. What do? You play a lot of baseball and basketball at camp?
Well, we don't really do baseball, but we do basketball.
Boy, that's
like knockout and stuff.
Oh, dude, knockout was awesome. Do you know knockout?
I don't know knockout.
Bro, we got to do an FAN knockout. So the way it works, I'm sorry, Alex, to go on a tangent, but you brought up knockout. So, like, I shoot a free throw, right?
Okay.
And then if I make it, great. I go to the back of the line. If I miss it and then you make the free throw before I get any kind of basket, I've been knocked out.
Oh,
so gotcha. It's a game. Dude, that is one of my favorite camp games of all time.
I didn't go to camp. That's why.
Okay.
I just played in the backyard with my brother.
It's because he's a real athlete. All right. Well, I'm glad you had a good day at camp, Alex, and thank you very much for listening. Does Dad want to make a sports
point?
Yes, I would love to, guys. So real quick, just on the standoff there, the two pitchers for the Yankees, it was Cody Petit and Ian Hamilton.
So two guys on the IL?
Oh, come on. That's
weak.
It was two guys
that aren't even playing.
That's weak.
I think that makes it very weak.
That's even weaker than I thought, the lameness of the stare down.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where I'm all for having fun and having a good time, but that was really stupid. And speaking of stupid, I may not be in the majority when I say this, and I don't know the fellow's name. If the fellow is listening, you will go to the front of the line, and we'll have a conversation with you, okay? But last night, in the middle of the Yankee-Red Sox game, when Rafael Devers hit that home run, pretty sure it was Devers' home run, there was a fan in the stands who caught the home run. Good for him. That's a pretty cool accomplishment. You caught a home run ball at Yankee Stadium. And that guy, here's the bad, and I'll give you the good. The bad is he got peer pressure. A bunch of numbskulls in the outfield.
He wanted to keep it.
Telling this guy.
Baseball. It's a Major League Baseball off a home run, not a foul ball. It's pretty epic.
Yes.
You should keep it, even if it's a bad memory.
And they're telling you to throw it back. And it's like, I don't understand that. First of all, that's not our tradition. That's not a Yankee tradition. That's not a Met tradition. Mm-hmm. That's a Cub tradition. We can leave that in Chicago. Much like Mets shouldn't steal the roll call, the Yankees are better than stealing the Chicago Cub throw it back thing. That's Agreed. Number one. Number two, that guy should have told everybody in left field to go, you know,
scratch.
This kid's listening. Scratch. Thank you. And instead, he throws it back. Now, let's get to the impressive part, and let's get to the part that involves us. So he threw a baseball back and got it to the mound, and it led me to this question.
That is so impressive.
In 2 weeks, Evan and Tiki will be taking the show to Yankee Stadium. It's the Subway Series, the Yankees against the Mets. And I challenge you, Tiki, and you, Loogie, and you, Sean Marash, assuming that the company allows you guys to come with us to Yankee Stadium. But if you do, I think we go to that exact spot in left field, and we try to throw a baseball as far as we can and see who throws the furthest.
You know, I played football for a lot of my professional life, and I took a lot of hits, sometimes in my neck, my back, my knees, but also my shoulder. Got a bad shoulder.
Come on.
Making an excuse. Where do we even go?
That is very Carton-like, let me tell you.
Jeez. I have one.
That's all you need.
I have one. That's it. And then my shoulder will be shot.
So I do believe that we should have this competition. I think the Yankees will be okay with it. We'll do it before batting practice. And we'll each have a baseball. And we will go to that spot and see how far we can throw it. And again, I am not a great athlete. I'm not a confident guy. I'm going to smoke all of you.
What?
I really think I will.
Why?
Because last night, it was brought to my attention that I should go back and watch an old video. And that old video was of Thomas Jefferson Aloysius Lugauer throwing a bullpen while shirtless. He was imitating Noah Syndergaard back in 2020 when he did that. And his form is so horrific.
Oh, God. So you're a non-athlete?
Well, he's a non. In this regard, he's not.
The only sport I've played over the last 10 years is beer pong. My athletic days are so far behind me that, my form is horrible at this point. So you don't need form, though, to throw it a far distance, though, to be fair.
That's fair.
You just got to chuck it.
Do you think you can throw it further than me, Sean and Tiki?
I think you are the favorite.
Really?
I do, actually.
So he's in left field.
The favorite.
Which is... Was it tight left field, or was he like more towards left center?
So we're going to reanalyze the video once we do this in a few weeks, but I think he was standing in left center field. And that's the other thing. Like, you don't have a lot of room to kind of like spread your legs out.
It's like, what is it, 308 down the left field line? 310, something like that?
Yeah, but it was left center, so it was more like 330.
More like 330.
Yeah.
So 330, how many rows up? Like...
No, he was like second row.
Like, I mean, second row up.
I think he was pretty close.
Right, 'cause it's barely clear. Second row up. So let's call it just 330. You minus the 60, so it's 270. You got to throw this thing 270.
Well, I'm not saying I'm going to beat him. I'm saying I'm going to beat you. I'm not beating that guy. That guy had an incredible throw, and it reminded me of Logan Ohapi, the catcher for the Angels, who became famous years ago as a kid when he caught a ball and threw like a missile. And if I'm not mistaken, he was much deeper than that fan was yesterday. So in one breath, I want to give that guy a lot of credit. That was an amazing throw, and you've inspired us to have our own competition at Yankee Stadium in just a couple of weeks. But you've also made me realize that people should not bully others into doing stupid things like throwing a home run ball back.
Just keep the ball.
Keep the ball.
Just keep it.
Would you keep the ball?
I would. It's baseball.
Me too. I don't care if I was in City Field.
It's the World Series.
Yeah. I don't care what game it is. Like, if I catch a home run ball, even if it's against my team, like, I don't feel like I did anything wrong. That's not our tradition. Why do I have to throw it back?
Yeah, but if you kept the ball, you don't get talked about. Now he's the next Henry Gardenhoser, and he threw the ball to home plate. So you become an internet sensation. Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year, that's right.
But do you really think that that video clip... Now, first of all, I don't think any of us would be impressive with our throwback. And most of the time, the throwbacks are not on TV. So there's a really good chance it's a fart in the wind. You throw it back, it doesn't go that far, it's not televised anywhere.
Yeah, nobody pays attention. You don't get any accolades from it.
Right. Is that
unless
really...
somebody is videoing it on their phone.
And even if they do, who cares? Is that better than the collector's item of having the home run in your home? I don't think it is.
Have you ever caught a baseball? I know you got trampled once, but all the games you've been to, and you strike me as a guy that would bring a glove, have you ever caught a ball?
Well, a couple things I want to address. I have not brought a glove to a game since I was 8, and that was when Bernie Williams hit me in the head with a pop-up, and my camp counselor got in the way, but that's a different story.
You didn't even catch it. The one game, the last game you had a glove, you got hit in the head.
I got hit in the head.
By a ball that was coming towards your glove.
Off the bat of Bernie Williams when he was in AAA. Yes, and then the counselor gave me the ball because he felt bad, and then I sold it back to him for $25 because I needed that money while I was an 8-year-old at camp.
Ah.
Camp Chenawanda is the name of the place. So I do not bring gloves to games, number one. Number two, I want to ask a question so I can give you a better answer.
Mm-hmm.
When you say catch a foul ball, do you mean like catch it on a fly, or do you mean pick it up off the ground?
Either one.
So I've gotten many a foul ball. There was one that rolled into my bag. That's a true story. There was one I picked up off a short hop. But I don't think I've ever caught one on a fly. They've all been picked up or, hey, it landed there. There's nobody in the ballpark. And I got it. And even now, it's still cool. Like, I don't trample people for foul balls. I don't think it's the coolest thing ever. And I've made that point before. But if I happen to get one... Like, would I bring it home? Yeah.
Yeah, but
I'd put it on the wall. It's a cool thing.
But then all it is a stupid baseball with scuff marks on it. Now you had a chance to throw a ball onto Yankee Stadium. Think how cool that is.
Is it that cool?
Yeah, we get to do it because we have that privilege. But if you're the average Joe or Jill at a game, you don't have that
privilege.
But is
that cooler than the home run ball?
Yeah, I think having the ball is better. It's still a Major League Baseball ball. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And throwing it back, you could tell people that was me that threw it back. But unless it was captured, nobody's going to know.
Yeah. It just goes away. It doesn't even exist anymore. Let's go to an angry Met fan because we need to address them. They just lost to the Pittsburgh Pirates because Carlos Mendoza decided he didn't really care about the game. Lee on Long Island. What's up, Lee?
Evan, I'm so glad that you brought this up and then put me on right away because I was losing my mind. You have to explain to me how Christian Scott, who's been pitching all year, is not coming off an injury. He's put on a 75-pitch pitch count.
Ridiculous.
Before the game starts. When he has the All-Star break next week, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay, that's another point. And they had to, for some reason, this bullpen, which has been overworked beyond belief, and is performing terribly, why they are in such a rush to put in. And by the way, the guy that went in the bullpen, was that Mariano Rivera?
Eric Orsi? He doesn't confuse you with Mariano?
I couldn't tell them apart. No, what is the rush to get Christian Scott, who gave up one hit and one walk the entire game, 5 2/3, because he's at 77 pitches?
Well, let's...
when he's been stretched out all year. It's not like he's been shut down for a month. The guy has been pitching all year in the minors and majors.
So
Make it make sense.
No, you're right. I'm glad you brought it up. The Met game is now final. We'll probably be on SNY our normal time at 4 o'clock. They finished this road trip 4-4 against Pittsburgh and Washington.
Which is okay, because that's exactly what the Mets are right now. They're a 500-ish team.
Yeah, look, they've stabilized after their hot streak. Yes. That's the way I would define it. As far as this is concerned, let's go back to July 3rd. That's very, very important. Go back to the 3rd of July.
And that was when the Mets built a 5-0 lead against the Washington Nationals, and Christian Scott was allowed to remain in that game into the sixth inning, where he allowed a game-changing 3-run home run. That was his 99th pitch. And what I was very mixed about when Mendy made the decision to leave Scott in that game was, while I love challenging the kid, mm-hmm. and I love giving him the opportunity to get that big out, the Mets had been babying him in AAA. He's barely pitched. Like, even in the starts he made, he was only throwing 70 or 75 pitches.
So why are they doing that? Just to protect
They're trying him? To limit the innings on his arm. And they were doing it preemptively, which is why they sent him down when they had all the off days and why they've babied him at AAA. With that said, how in your first start back does it make a lot of sense to push him to 99 pitches? And that's my point. Why push him when he hasn't been doing that? Now you get to 5 days later, and there's nobody on base. There's two outs and nobody on in the sixth inning, and his pitch count is significantly lower than it was July 3rd.
Yeah.
It's at 99 on July 3rd. It was at 77 today.
Yeah, but it sounds like
How do you mix the two?
But it sounds predetermined. It sounds analytical.
It is, and it's a mistake.
Of course it was.
Why
what happened afterwards.
But why were you okay with it? Like, I had a bigger issue. I would have understood pulling him earlier on the 3rd of July than I would today. Because also today, you had no bullpen. Which I said to Tiki before the game started. I said, this is going to be a tough one to win. There's no Diaz. There's no Nunez. There's no Garrett.
Right.
They're going to rely on Adam Ottavino, Jake Diekman, and probably Eric Orsi, who they just called up. So it doesn't square.
Right, doesn't calculate unless you're looking solely at the future of Christian Scott as opposed to the present.
But then
the needs of the Mets.
But then what did you do 5 days ago?
I do not know.
I can't square the two.
It doesn't make sense unless there was, after he went 99 pitches 5 days ago, he gets asked the next day how you feel, and he says, just a little fatigued. Mm-hmm. Right, it just, but that's probably major league. Being back in the major leagues, it's just a different effort level pitching in the major leagues than it is at AAA.
It's a part of why they shouldn't have pushed him on July 3rd.
Because
you were asking them to do
that. But they didn't know that.
They barely allowed him to pitch in AAA. They should have known that. Now, I do want to be fair. This is what happens when games are on while we're on the air.
Mm-hmm.
We watch the game in the corner of our eye, but we're not watching it fully. Let's hear from the manager of the New York Mets, Carlos Mendoza, on his thinking behind pulling Christian Scott when he did.
I know Christian Scott doesn't usually pitch with just 4 days in between. Did you have any hesitation in pulling him in the sixth?
No. Obviously, with the way things got out of hand after that, but we went into the game and we knew we were going to pitch more than 75 pitches. And, as soon as that last at bat, he got that second out at 77, I think it was. That's what we had Orsi, before the inning started going. It's a tough spot, obviously, but this kid's too important, obviously. We got to protect him, especially after he threw 99 pitches his last time out, going on regular rest this time for the first time in his career, and then going again his next time through on regular rest. So we went in the game and we knew it was only going to be for 75 pitches.
Then why have him be pushed 5 days earlier? Like, I get it. He's pitching on regular rest. The Mets have opted to not use a six-man rotation because Jose Buto's been this weapon out of the bullpen. Then why? And I'm sorry, baseball is like a connected tissue. I go back to July 3rd. I go back to that game. Why in the sixth inning, as you've now built a 5-1 lead, you got a 5-1 lead. If you know Christian Scott is going to pitch on regular rest, and hey, we don't want to push him too much, why are you pushing him in the sixth inning that even allowed Luis Garcia to hit that 3-run home run? That's where I'm annoyed. I'm annoyed by the inconsistencies
of it. It's the inconsistency, and it doesn't make sense. If you're going to say this now, why didn't you say that or do that later or earlier before? And so this is probably feedback from Christian Scott. So they're just being very cautious. That's the only thing you can chalk it up to, because why not treat it the same in two very similar situations? The difference is Christian Scott probably said something about fatigue and, that felt short or whatever it may have been, because clearly 75 pitches was predetermined.
Yeah.
It was before the game even started, not, hey, you're in the third inning. How you feeling, kid? It was before the game started that they made the determination.
The other thing I wouldn't do is, if you're going to go to the bullpen with two outs and nobody on a 2-2 game, how about you go to somebody who's not making their major league debut in Eric Orsi? As much as we may not love Adam Ottavino, I trust Adam Ottavino in a spot like that more than a kid making his major league debut. With that said, the Mets lost. They had a 4-4 road trip. More on that coming up at 888-808-1019. And a lot of people have ideas on how they would have handled last night at Yankee Stadium. Do you bow to the peer pressure of a bunch of drunkards telling you to throw a home run ball back? Or do you say, screw it, man, I want to keep this home run ball. I'm not stealing Chicago tradition. A lot to get to here on this busy Monday in New York City. Evan and Tiki, Met fans are pissed off that they lost to the Pittsburgh Pirates, mad at Carlos Mendoza, and even mad that Pete Alonso was an All-Star. More on that a little bit later on. Last night, the Yankees lost to the Red Sox. Some guy in left field became like a celebrity because he threw an absolute bomb back in after Devers hit the home run. And when I saw that happen last night, I was like, my God, I would have run out of the building with that baseball. And I'm not even a big baseball collector. I've said that before, that foul balls, I'm not going to run anybody over for it. Mm-hmm. But if I happen to get a home run ball in a Yankee-Red Sox game, I'm certainly not going to be pressured to throw it back the way that poor guy did last night. And you're on my side, Tiki.
I am. I mean, keep it.
Yeah. That's a damn cool thing to acquire. Let's go to Mike in West Caldwell. What's up, Mike?
Yeah, you got to have a dummy ball with you when you go. If you're sitting in the outfield and you bring a dummy ball with you, on the unlikely event that you get the ball, you throw the dummy ball back. You satisfy the fans, and now you got the ball.
It's a great idea. It really is. Like,
it's a no-brainer.
You just always carry a baseball with you when you go to a baseball game. And
go get a cheap little rubber ball, too. It doesn't matter. Seriously, like
you're giving them a quick glance.
They're not going to notice.
Yeah.
Just get the cheapest whatever fake kid ball you can find and throw that back out there.
We actually did, my father and I, the exact opposite. And what I mean by that is years ago, you know, Lugie asked me if I've ever gotten a foul ball. I've gotten a lot of foul balls because I sit at games, and just by accident, I'm going to get foul balls. You go to enough games, right. You sit behind the plate like that, especially at the old Chase Stadium, you're going to get balls. So there was a foul ball. I told you the one that ended up in my bag.
And you're above the net, so it doesn't even...
Yeah, at Chase Stadium.
It's not affecting you.
At Chase Stadium, I was above the net, and it was like foul ball territory. And this was at the old Chase Stadium. So there's a line drive. It bounces around. You know, hysteria ensues. It ends up in my bag. And my dad sees it and says, don't say anything. I was like, okay. So we see the ball. We look at it very quietly. But don't say anything. To continue to let people go nuts looking for this baseball. And nobody can find it. And like 5 minutes go by with people looking under. Where's the ball? Where's the ball? Meanwhile, him and I are like, we got the ball. So it's actually the exact opposite.
So you never even acknowledged that you had it?
Nah.
Not to anybody.
Nah, we just disappeared.
That's great.
We don't know where it went. Caused people to go nuts. Lewis and Lyndhurst. How you doing today, Lewis?
Yes, how you doing? So, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Jorge Posada's last game, Division Series 2011. Ivan Nova gives up two home runs to start the game. Marcus Thames hits one left. Don Kelly hits one right. I catch it. I looked at it, and I chucked it. But here's my regret.
Yeah.
Don Kelly started the game either playing third base or left field. In the 7th or 8th, they move him to right field. I could have traded that thing for like a Miguel Cabrera autograph, but I chucked it. In my defense, it made it all the way to Robinson Cano at second base.
Not
it
bad.
Bounced like 3 or 4 times, but I was in the middle of an aisle. Yesterday's guy, hey, he put the mustard on it. He was in the aisle.
Yeah.
But he was able to chuck it.
That's kind of
my biggest regret.
Yeah, no kidding, man. That's the thing I'm scouting, because me, Tiki, Lugie, and Sean will have a competition in a few weeks at Yankee Stadium when we're there for the Subway Series, assuming the Yankees give us permission, and I certainly hope they will, where we're going to see how far we can throw a ball from those left field stands.
I mean, if you're in the aisle, you do have space to take a step.
You got a little bit of room, but not as much as if you had an open field.
But it's
basically.
Also very awkward, because you're taking a step down.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of not... Like, I don't know, you're not used to taking a step down and throwing flat.
So
it could jack you up a little bit.
I have an interesting question for you.
Somebody could fall.
Well, we don't want that. And Yankees, we promise we will not sue anybody, okay? It'll just be, hey, it's our fault. We're morons.
We're throwing the ball back at our own risk.
Yeah, right. A very interesting question was posed by Paul Rosenberg off air, who's doing a great job filling in for Lugie, who's filling in. I don't know what you're...
For that guy who's on vacation.
Yeah.
Doing whatever.
Yeah, still tweeting about the Mets, by the way. Yeah. Give it a break. My God. Like, you say I get caught up. Was I tweeting on vacation? I put Twitter away.
What, I did a couple of Rico, sure.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Damn right. I did a Rico walking out of Nationals Park on Tuesday night.
I mean, you went to the game, so I guess that's okay.
Yeah. I also did one on Monday night. I did a couple of Ricos.
This is the Rico Brogna Podcast.
But Rosie brought up a really interesting question because we want to be fair in this competition.
Okay. Let's hear it.
Do you feel like you can throw a football further than you throw a baseball?
No.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Baseball, definitely. For
baseball. Me. That's what I thought, Rosie, because Rosie was suggesting, hey, to make it fair, since Tiki played in the NFL for a million years, mm-hmm. why don't you allow him to throw a football, which I wouldn't be against. But then my thought was, I don't think he's throwing a football further than a baseball.
No, baseball, because you have control over
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
A football, my hands are still small, so you throw football, like you got, if you grip it wrong, it flutters.
Yeah.
And you're done. Baseball, it's really hard to make it, it's not going to flutter. It's going to yeah. fly straight. Regardless, so definitely baseball.
And by the way, we will allow spider tack to be used if we want a good grip of the baseball when we make this throw from left field in just a couple of
you
weeks.
You think they'll give us a rosin bag? I want to try this. Rosin and spit.
And sweat. You put and it sweat. All together. I'll wear my rosin and sweat t-shirt at that game. Let's go to Peter, who's calling from Pequannock. What's up, Peter?
Hey, guys. So I wanted to chime in on the manager thing and I think you guys are missing the killer combo of maybe bringing Showalter in and Donnie Baseball as kind of like an assistant manager.
Bench coach.
Yeah, something like that. And if he missed, you know, if we miss that, if Showalter wins, he'd probably retire anyway, and then Donnie can take over. And if it doesn't work out with Showalter, then you've got Donnie sitting there.
Mm. By the way, we're acting as if
this is a real proposition.
Well, first of all, Don Mattingly would never be allowed to leave for a lateral position. He currently works for the Toronto Blue Jays. But here's the other thing that jumps out at me. We're talking about Don Mattingly as if he's a kid. He's 63 years old. So when we talk about, oh, Buck will be here for a year and then Donnie will take over, he's almost a senior citizen. So it's not as if Don Mattingly is, you know, that young.
I can't right. do that. Look at Pete Carroll. You can't do that.
Yeah, Pete Carroll.
Can I give you a quick Pablo story, though?
Go ahead.
All right. Like 30 years ago, I'm in college, and we went to the Red Baron Stadium in Scranton, where the Clippers were coming in to play the Red Baron. So Jorge Posada was on the team at the time, and he skies this foul ball down the left field line, and me and the other five people left in the stands chase it down. I get it, and I stayed after the game to get autographs from a bunch of the Clippers at the time. So I have Jorge's autograph on an International League Baseball, you know, from that game. So
that's a cool one.
Good thing you didn't throw that ball back.
No, there's no chance you're throwing that ball back.
That's why you don't.
Exactly, because you never know.
I don't know the
circumstance. As Carl before said, he could have traded it in.
The only circumstance where I would throw a ball back, and I would do it just to be the heel jerk Met fan that I am, is if I was at Wrigley Field. I was at a Met Cub game in the belly of the beast where this tradition was really created,
right.
And a Cub hit a home run. And I would heal it up by saying, oh, hey, you guys like throwing it back?
One of you guys want this?
And then I pelt it.
Psych.
That's the only time I would do something like that. By the way, just so we have the ages correct, Don Mattingly is 63.
Mm-hmm.
Buck Showalter, 68.
Yeah. I mean, what are we saying?
It's not
an age. No. Donnie doesn't feel that old, though. I don't know why.
I think he doesn't feel old because he was playing while Buck was managing him. Mm. But what we got to remember is that when Buck Showalter was managing the New York Yankees, he was incredibly young. He was 36 years old when he took over as the Yankee manager. So he was, you know, a kid managing, essentially. So I think that's why the age feels a little bit different. By the way, I hate to give you the bad news. If the Yankees get desperate and say, let's fire the manager, let's try what the Marlins did in 2003, what the Mets did in 2008, what the Phillies did in 2022. Brad Ausmus and his career 486 winning percentage would be the brand new manager of the New York Yankees.
Yeah, part of that was his team.
Part of that was his team. I mean, all of it was his team.
I know, but I mean, people look at that and they start judging him.
He's
a terrible manager.
You know, Tink, all I did was give you a fact.
Well, they were supposed to be terrible, and he just kind of managed them to be exactly what they were supposed to be.
Listen, I didn't offer an answer on if he's a good manager or not. I gave you the facts.
Christ.
You just don't. Sometimes when people give facts.
I'm just adding context to the facts.
It doesn't need context.
I mean, it does. Detroit Tigers stunk then.
I've realized that sometimes when you just give facts without any explanation, people get really pissed off. Can I give you an example of when I did this? And it actually happened on vacation, which shows that I'm a liar.
Is this your wife?
No, it has nothing to do with my wife.
It has to do with sports and social media. All right? Okay. Listen to what I tweeted and tell me if I did anything wrong other than give a few facts. Are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I guess I really wasn't on vacation. It was right before I went away. Adrian Wojnarowski tweeted that the New Orleans Pelicans were giving up the package that they gave up for DeJounte Murray. Mm-hmm. If you guys recall, that trade was made back on the 28th of June. The Pelicans acquired DeJounte Murray.
Yes. Okay?
And so the package was laid out in the tweet. And I responded by saying, compare this to the return on Mikal Bridges.
Yes.
Now, I didn't say anything. I didn't offer an opinion. I didn't say Leon Rose is a schmuck. I didn't say the Pelicans are, you know, robber barons. I merely said, hey, why don't we compare the returns?
Yes, but you...
And somehow that was construed as I'm offering some opinion. All I gave you was just, hey, compare the returns, yeah, I mean, this, and I'm the bad guy.
But you know why, Evan, what? Because as soon as you compare the returns, it looks like the Knicks overpaid for Mikal Bridges.
That's your determination.
I'm not, but asking the question that has an obvious answer, you're going to get... The answer is going to be is the reaction. It's not what you said. It's what the answer is.
Well, that's up to them.
You know what I mean?
That's up to the people to determine how they feel about that. They could say the Pelicans gave up nothing. They could say, yeah, we gave up more, but Bridges is a better fit than Murray, which he clearly is. But it's like what I just did with Brad Ausmus. All I said was his winning percentage. And it's like, well, that's not fair. What did I say that was wrong?
Nothing. But when you give it not as an opinion, but just as a catalyst for other people to go find the answer, they're reacting to the answer they get. Because that's what you were leading them to that answer. Without saying it, you were leading them to the answer. If your favorite color was red and my favorite color was green, and I was like, well, you're stopped at a stoplight. What are you looking at? You're like, oh, a red light? Oh, my God. He said red. I hate red. That's what you're thinking of. Think of that.
I don't get that comparison at all.
That's exactly what you did.
Is that what I did?
What color is a stoplight? It's red. I hate red.
Which side of the road do they drive on in Ireland?
They drive on the left side.
They drive on the left side.
But the driver's on the right side.
What?
Yes. And you know why?
Why?
Because in England, you used to ride in the pre-automobile day, you rode horses. And you didn't know who was coming your way. So you'd go all the way left. In case that person coming towards you was a foe. And if that person was a foe, your sword side is your right side.
Interesting.
And so in London, or in England, and also in Ireland, they drive on the left side of the road.
Oh, one other question before we get back to your
calls. The French do the opposite, by the way.
Yeah, well,
because they hate the English.
Exactly. They can't stand the British. Were you in Ireland on the 4th of July?
Yes.
How'd they treat it? It didn't matter?
Didn't.
They just ignored its existence. You know, all I could think about on the 4th of July, and I love the 4th of July, it's my favorite holiday, was a caller called in. If you guys missed this, I think this was the greatest comparison I've ever heard.
On the 4th of July.
And I said, or maybe you said, hey, what happens in England on the 4th of July? Like, how do they treat it? Like, how do they treat it? Like,
oh, you mean on the show?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
It was on our show.
Yes, we were talking about that.
And maybe it wasn't how do they treat the 4th of July. Maybe it was simply how do they feel about the 4th of July?
They probably ignore it.
Well, his answer was, I'll give you a comparison. Imagine the Mets or the Yankees lost on a Tuesday night in the middle of May. They lost. They moved on. They forgot about it. And I was like, that makes a lot of sense.
Right,
they had such a colossal empire that losing to the colonists and having us be free was like a loss on a Tuesday to the Tigers.
Yes.
It sucks. You'd rather win.
Yeah, they thought they would come crawling back for governance and help and everything else, and they didn't, obviously, because we are an independent country.
That's right, damn it.
I love the 4th of July.
What are you waving at?
I'm waving at you to wave at SNY. Hello, SNY.
Oh, they took us early today.
They did.
What's up, SNY?
Interesting. Hello, SNY. How you guys doing? That broadcast today was something else, man. No, I'm just kidding. I have no idea. I only watched an hour of it before we came on the air. But the Mets did lose to the Pittsburgh Pirates. They finished this road trip with a record of 4-4. My goal going into this road trip was 5-3.
Mm-hmm.
I said win 3 out of 4 against the Nats, split against Pittsburgh, and really just stabilize after that winning streak. Obviously, they do a game worse than that. They go 4-4. They lost the last two games against Houston. And what's really bothered me, and sometimes you know this is going to happen, and I knew this was going to happen. I go back a week and a half ago. It was the last time we were on the air together. I brought my son to work. I brought Jet to work, and we had a great time, and He enjoyed meeting Big Mac. I mean, Sean Morash. He enjoyed talking to Tiki. Enjoyed everything. Loogie, who he calls MJF. We had a great time. And then we went to the game. And the Mets won a game against the Astros, continuing their winning ways. Everything felt great.
Yes, you saw a victory.
We saw a victory, 7-2. And after the victory was over, it was fireworks night. And I said to Jet, do you want to stay for the fireworks or are you over it? And he's like, nah, let's stay for the fireworks. And about 5 minutes after the game ended, prior to the fireworks starting, you guys may not be familiar with this, there was an impromptu concert where Jose Iglesias took the field.
Yes. We are aware.
Are you aware of this?
I'm very aware. I thought this Sean was... won't stop talking about it.
Ah, whatever. Oh, my God. Right. They started playing it, and Jose was lip-syncing to it. He was like, oh, my. City Field, let's go. He was going crazy, right? And then the Mets started, like, dancing, and they came out on the field, and they were celebrating.
Yes, and then they lost the next two to the Astros. And...
Before we get to that, this is happening, and I have to tell you, I thought it was great. Like, I even posted a video up on social media, and you probably can hear me in the background laughing. Like, this is funny. So I'm having a good time. Jet's having a good time. The ballpark's having a good time. And about 5 minutes, Tiki, after the concert ended, I got a feeling. I got a feeling. I knew that there would be Mets fans and there would be non-Mets fans who would point at that moment and compare it to Timmy Trumpet.
Oh, come on.
And compare it to the Mets celebrating like they won a World Series in spring training in 2021. And if the Mets cooled off, which they were going to do, they were not going to play 800 baseball. That would be blamed for the Met struggles. And it hit me like in the pit of my stomach on Friday night that even if I think it's BS, which I do, I know that people will treat this like a turning point in the Met season.
Why? Because they're doing exactly what they are. They are a 500 team right now. And they've been basically a 500 team for the first half of the season. And so they're not great. They're not horrendous. They're kind of just right in the middle. One thing or another is going to cause them to win or cause them to lose, and you cannot predict it. It's almost impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So they are a 500 team, which is, by the way, what the expectation was.
Yeah, I agree.
From a lot of people.
By the way, I don't think you're necessarily wrong with your assessment, but would you not agree that after that game ended, you knew that if they struggle a little bit, and did they struggle a little bit? I guess they lost 5 out of the next 7, if you want to call that a struggle. They blew a game on Saturday against Houston. They lost a heartbreaker on Sunday after the 8-hour rain delay.
Right.
So, sure, I don't even look at it as them collapsing. I look at it as they were going to cool off. They've cooled off. But I knew that much like the Timmy Trumpet concert, this would be used, whether it's from Met haters, some who reside on this radio show, or just Met fans who look to get pissed about everything, that it would be used.
When you say the Timmy Trumpet concert, you mean when he was actually in the... in the ballpark.
Dodger series. 2022.
Yes, when he got up and he waited for Edwin Diaz to come out and start. Yes.
And after that series against LA, they had a very mediocre September against bad teams.
Yeah.
Facts are facts. But it's been used by so many as like, that's when the season turned.
Just like Grimace wasn't the catalyst. Just like Oh My God wasn't the catalyst. It's also not the fault. It's not.
But it doesn't matter if it's true
or
not.
But you give credit and blame to the athletes.
But Tiki.
To the players.
I agree with you.
To Orzy, whatever the heck his name is.
Blame Eric Orzy, you mean.
Orzy, exactly. Yeah. Right? Put it on where it belongs, not on stupid, superstitious nonsense.
I agree with you, but like it or don't like it. And this is the reality Loogie has to face, too. I don't think that there was any problem with what they did Friday night. I want to make that clear. I enjoyed it.
Game was
I
over.
I just knew that if they start to struggle, like the Timmy Trumpet thing, it's the same thing. Let me ask you. Do you guys think Timmy Trumpet ruined the 2022 season?
No.
Do you, Loogie?
I do not.
Do you, Rosie?
I do not.
But some people do. Mm. And that's the same thing with the OMG concert.
And that's why I have preached positivity. Because there's a lot of Met fans that want to look to the negatives, that want to look to jinxes, that want to look to mushes, that want to look to outside forces that cause losing. That's the one point. The other thing is, He's right. And Marash is part of this. The no fun police. They see the Yankees, and I'm going to be blunt. They stink right now. So they want to put all their time and energy, the Yankee fans, in being the no fun police and saying, look at this concert. You shouldn't be doing this. How about the fact that Jose Iglesias has brought leadership, great defense, a great singing voice, and awesome at bat, and a rallying cry for this team. And so the no fun police want to rain on that parade.
He did go 0 for 4 today.
Yes, he did. That at bat against Chapman yesterday, though, was magical.
Right.
Here's the truth about the Mets, and you just touched on it. You said, hey, guys, they're a 500 team.
Mm-hmm.
Fair opinion to have, right? That's what they are.
It's what their record says they are, now below 500, but still, that's what their record says they are.
But think about how they got there, okay? They started the season 0-5.
Mm-hmm.
They then went 12-3 in their next 15 games. They then went 10-25 in the next 35 games. Then they went 17-6 during this recent stretch, and now they're 4-6. So they've gotten a 500, but they've done it in this incredibly streaking way. I am projecting, and I said this to you last week before I went away, they're about to go through what I hope is a slightly above 500 run.
I think they are on a flat road right now. They're riding their roller coaster.
Yes.
And that's hard. That's frustrating because you know that the down is inevitably coming. I'd rather be like this, 4-4, 4-6, because that's what you are.
Stabilized.
You're just stabilized. You're not giving yourself false hope, and you're not throwing yourself out of the playoff conversation.
Right.
You're just stabilized.
Yeah, I
and
think.
And if you come to the trade deadline in three weeks now?
July 30th.
Right. You go to the trade deadline and just
3 weeks
three
from tomorrow.
Weeks,
yeah.
You now can make an informed decision. It's not based on the emotion of being great or the despondency of being terrible.
I think you are right that this is likely what they are. And I looked at this stretch. Even before they played the Friday night game. And that's why I said to you, hey, they're about to play 17 games. Go 10-7.
Yes.
And I think your reaction, maybe not you as much, maybe Loogie's reaction, I forget, it's been a while, was, you should expect more. And I'm like, not really. I mean, 10-7 is fine. That gets you to the All-Star break in a really good spot. Well, what have they done since? They lost 2 out of 3 to a really good Astros team, a team that you knew you buried way too quickly. And I'm talking to you, Yankee fans. You buried their asses too quickly, and I can promise you this. You may beat them, but you're going to see them again.
Hmm.
You can write that down. So you lost 2 out of 3 to a good Astro team. You blew Saturday's game, fine. Then you go face peer-tier teams, and you split against them.
Mm-hmm.
There were some games that maybe you should have lost that you won, and vice versa, and you split them. I look at what's next, home against Washington, home against Colorado, and that's where you better do your damage. And that's where my bar gets raised.
Right.
But to ask.
Because they're out of, I guess Washington kind of is still
Washington's appear to, they're still in it.
Tier team.
Yeah. Colorado, even though they've played better, bad team.
Right, you should destroy it.
And you're at home, where the Mets have not done enough damage this season. But the idea that this is being linked to a concert, and I knew it was before they even lost a game. I could feel it. You could feel it, Loogie.
It was such a
great... You knew it!
And I hate that because it was such a great night. Now, at the same time, Jalen Brunson is on SmackDown doing one of the best angles I've ever seen.
Pretty good stuff, by the way.
We'll call it a celebrity. I wasn't Rodman Malone, but it was awesome. And there's talks that they want to still do stuff with Halliburton and him on WWE. And I'm having this great night. And Evan's right. There's these damn negative Nancys, Debbie Downers, that want to be like, see, this is brutal. By the way, what we're forgetting here is, and Evan, you could tell me, that Sunday night when Diaz got booted, everybody thought the wheels would fall off. Well, guess what? They didn't.
No, you're right.
They didn't.
They managed it.
Right.
And by the way, Mindy did that for the first half of the season, so he was probably well-positioned. By the way, did you think Jalen Brunson hurt his hand?
No, but the coalition of Nick haters did.
I didn't say that.
Because I got a text from Fatso,
I
got a text from Evan.
His hand bent so awkwardly. It looked like there was no stability in his hand.
He overshot it.
Then he was supposed to pick up the chair, and I thought he was going to smash whoever he was.
Tyrese Halliburton?
Yeah, was it Halliburton?
So it was Logan Paul and Halliburton.
Whoever it was, and then he gave the chair over. Like, I can't do this.
I think he tweeted out afterwards that his hand is fine. He put the LOL emoji because he knew what the cameras caught.
It's wrestling, too. He could have just been selling the injury. I'm serious.
No, he put his hand down and it gave, man. I'm just telling you.
Tiki's 100% right here. He did. Oh,
I would love to see Jalen Brunson and Tyrese Halliburton get in the ring. I think it'd be tremendous. I think that is such great. Now, from a sports aspect, it's a huge mistake. Everybody around here would freak out. I even think Loogie would freak out because you can't risk that kind of damage.
Damage.
Malone and Rodman did it.
It was during the NBA Finals, but I believe
no,
it was right
after. No, it was after the Finals.
No, but it was like right after
they
the NBA
built
Finals.
It up, and then the match, wasn't it at, it was Hog Wild, I think, or something like that?
Either Road Wild, Hog Wild, whatever they called it. But Rodman, didn't he skip practice to be on Nitro one of those times? He just didn't go to practice to be with the NWO.
But he would skip practice to go to Vegas for
That's
a night.
True. The most underrated thing about Dennis Rodman's professional wrestling career is he had a lot of matches in WCW. Like, more than you remember.
He was great.
He fought Macho Man at a pay-per-view.
Correct.
I was like, what the hell is going on?
Was he starting a second career and nobody even realized it?
Well, we realized it. Mm. Us geeks who were into the Monday Night Wars realized what was going
on. Dude, they were awesome. Both of them, Malona and Rodman. To Evan's point, if it could exist in a vortex and everybody would walk out okay, I would be down for that mix tag with Paul, with LA Knight, with Hallie, and with JB back at the Garden. That would be awesome.
That would be tremendous.
But
no, you can't risk that. Can you imagine?
I would never come to work again because Sean and Evan, and even though they can't really publicly laugh, come on.
No. Here's the predicament I'm in. I'm going to be perfectly honest with people as an IBO. I do not want anybody to get hurt. I'm not that kind of guy. These guys are professional athletes. I respect what you did. I respect what they do. I'm not rooting for anybody to get hurt. But unfortunately, I'm in the position as a fan where you guys get
you
it hurt behooves me because
you
I own
can't
your
help yourself.
Right. So if Jalen Brunson suffered some kind of injury in a wrestling event, I would feel awful, but I would not be able to stop laughing. Mm. I feel horrible saying that.
LOL
I do.
LOL Knicks.
That would be an
that's
LOL
what the,
Knicks
that's
moment.
What that sounds like.
And then it turns into a lottery pick.
Oh,
and
God, stop.
Nah, that's not going
to
happen. Jalen,
you just want that to happen.
I don't, honestly. I mean, I do, but I don't.
That said, the Bloodline versus the Nova Knicks, book it, Triple H. You know what
yeah, let's see that one. Let's go to John in Danbury, Connecticut. What's up, John?
Man, good afternoon.
What's up?
What's up?
So let me tell you, I've been listening since 1932, and I got to tell you, when they did the revamping and they announced this Felix Unger, Oscar Madison, little Murray thrown in that pairing, I had my doubts. Yeah. I had my doubts. But you guys, when you found your groove, it's really, really good. So I hope you do it at least another 10 years, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. So real quick. So this was already stated, but with me, it's all about attitude. So we could talk about Boone trying to go in there and maybe change his persona or whatever. But, you know, what's that going to get him? Because once these players reach a certain status, he has nothing to back it up with.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that they'll get rid of him before they get rid of them. So I love Aaron Judge, who doesn't? But when you take that title as captain, it's just not stats. I mean, it's the whole thing. So
yeah, it's on him. John, you're saying what I'm saying. It's on the players, the captain players.
He has given off the perception that he's doing that kind
of
stuff.
No, I think he is. It just doesn't, we don't see it.
We saw him talk to Strowman.
Right.
And that got a lot of attention because it certainly looked like Aaron was saying to Marcus, hey, look, you were emotional.
But he wasn't.
Well, we don't do that
around
here.
But he wasn't like, exactly. He was tamping him down.
Right.
He wasn't chastising him. It was encouraging him in a unique way. And that's just the personality of this team. Now, we as fans might not like that, but that's just who the Yankees are. Their manager, exemplifies that. Their players do. There is a couple of outliers that are maybe a little on the edge, like mentally, emotionally, but in a fun way. But this team is steady. They've always been that way. And I think Aaron Judge is the reason they're that way.
But the problem is when you say they've always been that way.
Yes, I know.
That's a phrase.
The result has not been
right.
You haven't seen great results because they are.
Here's what we've seen from the New York Yankees, and I'll call it the Aaron Boone era. Aaron Judge began a year earlier. Joe Girardi was the manager. And we've certainly seen a lot of changes on this roster over the years, including the additions of a guy like Gerrit Cole before 2020, Juan Soto before this season, some young players coming up like Volpe, the dismissal of Gary Sanchez. What they have done consistently, and it's weird, is they've had a lot of really good starts, and then they've had these extended tailspins.
Right.
And it's tough to figure out why. You know, this isn't quite 2022 yet, but you can understand why the Yankee fan looks at this and says, hey, this feels like 2022. Even 2023, we can connect it to the Aaron Judge injury all we want. They were 11 games above 500. And then, for an extended stretch, they went 26-43. They were one of the worst teams in baseball. The brief season of 2020, the same thing happened. They've done this consistently where every year they get off to these good starts and then have an extended period of time where they play terrible baseball. And you start to wonder why. And you try to figure it out.
There isn't an easy answer.
There is not.